We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
How about that weekend of baseball, everybody? If you're sitting here Monday morning like we are, we're recording on Monday morning, and you think back to that weekend of, I don't even want to call it baseball, that was an embarrassment that needs to be burned. Those game tapes need to be burned and buried. I'm just disgusted with what I saw over the weekend. Scott, are you as mad as I am?
Yeah, they picked a really bad time to go away offensively. I mean, it's been pretty much anemic at this point. Over the past almost a week now, since last Wednesday, they've been just doing absolutely nothing with the bat. So, yeah, man, it was a fun weekend, but it was frustrating at the same time. So, fun for different reasons, I guess.
Well, the biggest weekend of the year, arguably. The Blue Jays are hot. They're rolling since the trade deadline. They got Price and Tulo. They're the hot team. Everyone's saying the Yankees are chasing the Blue Jays, not the other way around. And the Yankees could have made a statement. They needed to win the series, win 2 out of 3. And instead, they laid an egg, got swept, and it's not looking pretty right now.
Now, when you score one run over the course of a series against your biggest competitor at this point, you don't show a lot of fight. That's one thing that was really disappointing, and two, the pitching was pretty decent, I think, and they just didn't. There was no support. There was zero support. It was like the guys didn't show up.
We're going to get into all of that, but before we do, let's talk about some things that maybe aren't as bad as the baseball we saw. Like, we did the Bronx Pinstripes outing on Saturday at the game. That was a good time.
That was a lot of fun. We had 17 people come out. We do this every year, for those of you who don't know. We have about 20 to 25 writers on the website, and every year, we go out to a game and sit in the bleachers and just kind of go out together. So it's just a way for all of us to get together and hang out for a little while. And it was a lot of fun. We went to Billy's beforehand and hung out, and then went to the game. And unfortunately, the game was terrible, so we had a lot more time to hang out and shoot the breeze together. So that was cool.
Yeah, I feel like I didn't even watch the game.
I barely remember the game, to tell you the truth, just because there was nothing happening. And the one piece of action that we had, right? We were over saying hi to Cousin Brewski, who we had on the show, who was a beer vendor. He's been there forever. He's been there for 3 stadiums. If you haven't listened to the interview we had on the show with Cousin Brewski, definitely go back and check the logs and listen to that, because he's a Yankee Stadium treasure.
Yeah, we did that back in May. He's an awesome guy to talk to, and even more fun in person.
Yeah, he's a blast. He's a lot of fun. Catch a buzz with the Cuz, and that's what we were doing when that Grand Slam hit. So
it's probably a good thing that we were getting beer and not sitting out there watching that happen.
Yeah, that's true. That's definitely true. It didn't hurt as much, I guess, when we were sitting there talking to him. But
yeah,
it was fun overall. We had a good weekend, a good showing. Everybody had a good time, it seemed like. And every year that's kind of a highlight of ours. We all get together and look forward to it for sure.
So now that was our first loss as a website.
Yep, that is our first loss. Yeah, yeah.
Last 2 years we won. This year, not so hot. And it's funny, because the last 2 years the team sucked, and now they're good, and they got a big series against Price and everybody, and they just laid an egg. But
yeah, what a letdown too, because we actually, we didn't expect the Blue Jays series on August 8th to be, a very big series, just because usually the Blue Jays act like they normally do and just kind of fade. But it turned out it was one of the biggest games of the season. And then with David Price going, and then us with Nova, we had a good pitching matchup, and everything was lined up for a good game. And unfortunately, we didn't hit Price like we usually do.
So this series was the first time the Yankees have lost a series in essentially a month. It was 9 series that they had either won or tied. And you and I talked about that every week. This team keeps winning series. That's good. That's building momentum.
Right.
And then they go out and get swept. Just totally, it was an embarrassing series. Like you said, the offense disappeared. The pitching was okay, but there's definitely some questionable decisions that I think Girardi made that I think we'll talk about in a few minutes. But really, I mean, the Blue Jays are right on your tails now. They're riding high. The Yankees are going on the road, and they're low right now. We got to see how this team reacts to adversity.
I mean, the momentum has completely shifted. When we're looking at the trade deadline and we're 5.5, 6 games up, whatever it was at that point, you know, I think we were obviously disappointed by a lot of people were very disappointed by the Yankees not making any real moves, and then the Blue Jays completely retooling and just filling every single hole that they had. But yeah, I mean, in a week, we've seen what happened. They came in and they definitely saw this series as a statement a hell of a lot more than the Yankees did. And they certainly did make a statement. I mean, the 1-4, those guys they're scary. They have a scary offense. You add in a number one, a leader of that pitching staff with David Price. It's definitely a scary team.
Well, like you said, the Blue Jays saw it as more of a statement, which is disappointing that the Yankees couldn't get up for this series and play a little harder. But, you know, this, I think, can go one of two ways. This can either bury the team and they go into a tailspin, or this wakes them up and they say, you know, shit, we have a playoff run now here. We've got a competitive division against the Blue Jays. They've got 10 more games against the Blue Jays. If we go out and win the majority of those games and just play good baseball, we can still win this division. And that's how they have to react.
Well, they need to turn it around quickly because we have 3 at Cleveland, and then we go to Toronto.
Yep.
I was listening to the game on Sunday while I was driving, and John Sterling was saying that all those games have already been sold out. So you know the crowd's going to be there. That place is going to be rocking, and they're going to be pumped up. So yeah, we need to steal some momentum somehow and go into Toronto and win those games or take 2 out of 3. We need to make a statement in their building now.
And if you thought guys like, you know, Bautista and Donaldson and Encarnacion and Tulo were scary in Yankee Stadium, they're even scarier up in the Sky Dome. I don't even know what that place is called anymore. What's it called? Toronto?
I don't know. It's the Sky Dome to me.
They absolutely mash the ball up there. It's scary.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those big home run parks, kind of like Yankee Stadium. But yeah, they are scary up there. And with that, that lineup is just, it's nasty. When we saw it in person, you could see just the raw power. Donaldson's just having one hell of a year. I mean, that guy is probably one of the best hitters in baseball, if not the best hitter right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's in the MVP talks.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, he's and now that with the padding that he has ahead of him and behind him, you know, two deep. I mean, that's crazy. That 1-4 is scary.
Yeah, so I think we're talking about this at the game, how it's kind of interesting they have Tulo leading off, but, you know, the first inning it might seem a little weird, but after that it actually makes for a really dangerous lineup because you turn the lineup over and then you got Tulo right there with all those guys in back of him.
Yeah, and I think one of the thoughts were, because they also acquired Ben Revere from the Phillies in the trade deadline, and I think a lot of people thought that he was going to be the leadoff guy with their who's the second baseman they went down? Snyder? Devin? I don't know. The second baseman was having a really good season. I think he was a rookie as well. But he's having a really good season. He's on the shelf right now with a shoulder injury. But he was hitting leadoff for a while. And then I guess you're giving Tulowitzki another at-bat. That's what's happening at the end of the day. And who doesn't want Tulowitzki to have another at-bat? So, you know, having Revere in the 9 spot, he hasn't hit like he did in Philly yet, but he probably will. I mean, he's a good hitter. And, yeah, he'll be setting the table for those guys after the first inning. So, yeah, it's scary. It's a scary lineup. And hopefully these guys can hit a big slump.
I guess, you know, it's my own, you know, feelings on the Blue Jays, but I didn't believe in them up until this weekend, and now.
Well, why would you? We've never been threatened by the Blue Jays. It's been 22 years since they've been to the playoffs, something like that. It's been a long time, so you know, objects are closer than they appear, I guess, in your rearview mirror at this point.
Well, since I think you mentioned this, but since the trade deadline, essentially, the Blue Jays have won 11 out of 12 games, and in that same time, the Yankees are 4-7. So there's your difference right there.
Yep, that's a big difference, and unfortunately, this supports a lot of the gripes for Yankee fans because a lot of people were upset that we didn't make a move and that Toronto was behind us just making move after move after move, and they were not small moves. These were all legitimate moves. I mean, from the lineup to your defense, I think Tulowitzki's a better defender, and then you get a literally a number one stud on your pitching rotation, and then you anchor the bullpen with the kid from Seattle. So they did a lot of work. They did a lot of work in that trade deadline and filled pretty much every hole that they had. So
yeah,
I guess I underestimated those moves because I agree. I wasn't really taking it as serious, but they've gotten my attention.
I said this on the trade deadline episode that we did where, sometimes you got to make, you don't need to make the David Price move, but you need to make a move to improve your team in little ways, just to give confidence back to your guys that we, you know, we're in this for the long haul. Down, we're playing for a World Series here, and they didn't. I mean, Dustin Ackley is essentially, I mean, he's hurt now, but I mean, that's a non-move in my opinion.
Yeah, that move doesn't even come up on the radar at all. But, you know, so I guess the moves that they were thinking are that these guys from the minors are going to come up, and that's going to be the jolt. And, you know, I think Severino does do that in some respect. But, you know, to me, there are other guys down there that can still do that, still have a similar impact. It's just a matter of if they're going to make a move. And right now, it doesn't even – I don't see it in the future, so – not in the near future, at least.
All right. Well, let's get into the games this week that we saw. They had three against Boston, and Boston's totally dead, you know, non-factor. They're rolling out, you know, veterans who are uninterested, and then some other young players that you might have never heard of.
Yeah.
But on Tuesday, the Yankees crushed them 13-3, and it was Tanaka versus Henry Owens. And Henry Owens is kind of the Luis Severino of the Red Sox. He's their number one pitching prospect in the system. He's had a really good year in AAA. He was actually fighting for a roster spot at the beginning of the year, and he had a rough spring training. But he came up and made his debut at Yankee Stadium. What'd you think of him?
You know, he doesn't have, like, amazing stuff, to tell you the truth. Like, when you see him, he's not overly impressive. I mean, there's nothing there to blow you away from what I saw. I guess his curveball, he's got a big hook that's one of his better pitches. But what is he, like, low to mid-90s fastball?
Yeah, you know, his stuff reminds me of, like, a Mark Burley type.
Yeah, I could see that. And he doesn't look very intimidating. He looks like a little boy. I don't know. He just looks like a little kid from, like, Sandlot or something. I don't know. He's not a guy that I would ultimately fear, at least from that one start. So I'm sure, obviously, it was his first start in Yankee Stadium against Yankees Red Sox. So, you know, maybe we didn't see his best, and he's got to get into the groove too. So I guess the jury's still out for me on him.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think if you're comparing his debut to Severino's debut, even though Severino got hit with the loss, we'll talk about that in a second. But I thought Severino's stuff just translated way more to the majors than Henry Owens. But back to that Tuesday game, Tanaka pitched, and he was cruising through four innings, you know, looked like the Tanaka of last May, and then all of a sudden sort of hit a roadblock, was starting to throw a lot of pitches, giving up a few hits. He ended up going six innings, five hits, and three earned runs, but he did give up another home run to Pablo. And just sort of like what we've seen out of Tanaka pretty much the whole year, just a kind of a very average start.
Yeah, I mean, we're still waiting for that real dominant start where he goes deep into the game. But I mean, we'll probably talk about this later. I know we will. But you know, it's like they're not even letting him go deep in the game if he was to get there. So I'm just confused on what's going on with him right now. He's kind of it looks like he's going through the motions. You know, I feel like he could turn it on when he does, but he's like giving people layups for these home runs. It's just strange because he's hitting the velocity's there. Like he's hitting those numbers. So I can't blame anything on injury right now. He just, you know, maybe the offense, the league's caught up to him a little bit. Maybe that's what we're seeing. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say if he's fully healthy or not, because you're right. He'll go out there and for three innings, he'll look dominant. He'll be throwing his 94 mile an hour fastball and his splitter is dipping out of the zone. And then all of a sudden he comes out there for the fifth inning and it looks like he, you know, can't get anybody out. He's throwing pitches out of the, you know, he's missing location with his fastball. They're not swinging at his splitter. And, you know, he gives up way too many home runs because he comes in with his fastball. Guys are sitting on it and he's getting crushed with it.
Well, and I think that's what we're seeing too. There's a lot more tape on him now, and I think guys are laying off that splitter, whereas last year, you know, he was getting a lot of swing and misses on that pitch, and he's not getting as many this year. And I think people are waiting for, you know, they might be sitting on a particular pitch, and you know that could definitely lead into more home runs. Obviously, if you're not swinging at that splitter, you know, you're able to get more lift on the ball. So you know, I think that that's probably one of the biggest factors is the fact that he's been in the league for a year. People have seen him now, and maybe they're more comfortable with facing him.
Yeah, he had 88 pitches on Tuesday night through six innings. But if you look at maybe those last 30 pitches, those were laborsome. So I think that's probably why Girardi made the move.
Yeah.
The Yankees' bats exploded, though, in the seventh inning off the Sox bullpen, which might be the worst bullpen in baseball. And that was sort of, you know, it was a close game. I think it was 3-2 or 4-3 Yankees, and then all of a sudden it's you know, 13-3, and the game's over. So.
And what was the dude? There was one dude who gave up a home run, Robbie Ross. Yeah, I thought he had three names. I thought he was like a Billy Bob or something. But he, the reaction that he had when that home run, when that ball was hit, was priceless. It was a pretty good. Like, his whole body just flipped. He was mad.
Yeah.
It just made it more entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, we're sitting here complaining the Yankees just got swept by Toronto, but we could be Red Sox fans right now.
Yeah, I know, that's true. And so I'm gonna celebrate the misery of their team at this point. So that was a fun game to explode on them.
Wednesday was a fun night. At least watching on TV, it looked like an awesome atmosphere in the Bronx. You know, sort of playoff atmosphere. Looked to be, you know, almost 50,000 people there. Everyone hanging on every pitch that Severino threw. You know, we talked about this last episode. This is the guy. This is the pitching prospect. He was the untouchable guy at the deadline. Cashman wasn't going to trade him. You know, you could have gotten David Price if you wanted to trade Luis Severino, but they weren't going to do that. So, you know, he came up and he looked really good, in my opinion.
He did. He looked. I thought he looked composed. It didn't look like the moment was too big for him, and the crowd was definitely behind him, which I think helped a lot. But he just, I don't know, his stuff looks really good. He looks like the real deal. Just, I mean, it's one outing. I get that. But I know Yankee fans were also pumped up. We got a voicemail. I think we're going to get to it a little early. So this is actually Anakin Joseph from the Bronx talking about Severino.
What's up, guys? My name is Anakin Joseph, from the Bronx, but live in Philadelphia now, and watched Luis Severino last night. It all I can say was filthy dominance. Going into that game, I knew the kid was either going to do real well or real bad, and because he had adrenaline pumping all of, you know, big game debut, Yankee Stadium, Red Sox. You know, pressure was on him, and he did great the whole night. Except that one mistake to David Ortiz that proved costly. You know, Chase Headley, the error act came back to haunt the Yankees. You know, hoping Chase Headley could do something offensively to redeem himself. But he pitched great. Seven strikeouts and five innings. No walks and only two hits. I mean, this is a good debut. If this is what we have in store for this kid, I'm glad we didn't trade him. That's all I can say. The guy was filthy last night. Thanks, guys. Keep up the good work.
All right, thanks, Anakin. I think we got your name right. Sorry, you were saying it pretty quick on the voicemail there, but I'm totally with you, man. I mean, Severino was throwing his fastball in the mid-90s. He had a little cutter slider action going at you know, 89, 90 miles an hour. Everyone was saying, you know, coming into the game that his changeup is probably his most you know, established pitch at this point. Seemed to be thrown at about 87 miles an hour. It had a lot of movement on it. I kind of wish he threw a little bit more changeups to get more swings and misses. But, you know, he was throwing fastballs and guys were late on it. I think Ortiz, who did hit a monster home run off of him, that was the only hit he got, after the game said, you know, his stuff was electric. So you hear that from a guy of Ortiz's caliber of a hitter. You know, as a Yankee fan, you got to get pumped up about that.
Yeah, and you know, it was unfortunate what happened because first of all, there was an error by Headley, but the pitch before that error was, I think, one of the most beautiful pitches. I mean, it was a knee-high strike on the black and was not called. Would have been strike three. Place would have gone ballistic, but it was not called. And then either next pitch or whatever, that same batter, chopper to Headley, and Headley, you know, boots the throw. So
18th it was error on the season for Headley.
Yeah, 18th. He's been better, but yeah, that's a lot of errors. A lot of those were in the beginning of the season. But anyway, it was unfortunate what happened to him because of that. Because I really wanted him to get that call. It was a beautiful pitch, and I was going crazy when they didn't call that. But yeah, overall, he looked really good. His stuff looked electric. Like I said, he didn't look like he was, you know, like the moment was too big for him. So I'm excited to see him the rest of the season and coming up on Tuesday. We need him to be big. We need him right now. So let's see what he can do.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much out of the last week, he's the only bright spot in the last week for me.
Yeah, well, 13 runs and him. So I think that's those are the two. 13 runs in one game. It's like we blew it all in one game, and then couldn't get. And we kind of, you know, that happens all the time. It's like you score like a boat ton of runs in one game, and then silence. Just the silence has been too damn long.
Yeah, and in that same game, the Yankees faced Stephen Wright, knuckleballer.
Just cheater.
Just couldn't get anything going. I hate
God, I hate knuckleballers.
It's awful.
Yeah. They're just annoying to watch. Yeah. I'm going to go. This is what I want to do. I want to spend like a month just go in my backyard and practice my knuckleball and see what happens. I feel like those guys just like get off the couch. Or they're, you know, they're position players, and then they want to extend their career, so they learn a knuckleball. It's nonsense.
And it's weird because like the Red Sox team, I mean, they had Wakefield for all those years, and then they got this kid.
Yeah. I know. It's frustrating to watch. I can only imagine how frustrating it is as a player when you're taking batting practice. And, you know, I was listening to, I think it was Aaron Boone talking about this when they used to face Wakefield, and how Steinbrenner would bring in a knuckleballer to pitch to the guys before the Wakefield starts, and the guys couldn't stand it. They didn't want to change their routines for one guy. They don't want to change the way that they're, you know, their timing or you know, whether it's a big leg kick or just a step or whatever. But I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was funny that Steinbrenner would like mandate they bring in a knuckleballer off the street to come in and throw to these guys before Wakefield, and the players just, you know, they couldn't handle it. They didn't like it. So it's frustrating, I think, for the batters. And you know, maybe that has to have something to do with this week. I mean, we saw two knuckleballers. You know, I don't know if that attributes to these guys going silent, but I mean, it certainly couldn't help.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like that sort of changed the offensive week around for us. We just scored 13 on Tuesday, and then they've scored four runs after that the entire week.
Yeah, so it's frustrating.
Thursday against the Red Sox, they got the win, and that was a series win. They won 2-1, and CeCe looked kind of like the CeCe of 4 years ago. It was pretty interesting to see. I was not expecting that. You know, I was expecting the same old CeCe to go out there, throw a million pitches through five innings, give up, you know, four or five runs. But instead, we saw mid-90s fastball out of him. Like, where did that come from?
Yeah, you know, he was fired up that whole game too. It seemed like he kind of mustered up some adrenaline from somewhere. I don't know where he got it, but I mean, he's always been a fiery player, but it seemed like he was extra pumped up for that game. And you know, maybe this is a new CeCe. Maybe this is a new mindset of like, you know, I'm sick of being mediocre. I'm just going to come in fired up. I don't know. I don't know what he had to do to get up for that game, but I hope he does it every single time. And I got to say, a very well-timed article by our guy, Roey Hader, he wrote an article just before that start. It was called In Defense of CeCe Sabathia, and kind of broke down why he thinks that we'll see a better CeCe for the rest of the season. So definitely check that article out. It was good timing on Roey, and hopefully he's right for the rest of the year.
Can he pick lottery numbers or something?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, absolutely CeCe's best start of the season, 8 strikeouts in 6 innings. Like I said, he reached 94 miles an hour when he got Ortiz with the bases loaded. Inside fastball, he was so fired up. I haven't seen CeCe that fired up probably since the 2009 playoffs.
And yeah, I think the umpire actually helped matters a little bit to get him fired up, because he actually came back out. You know, I don't remember what inning was, but where the home plate umpire came out and kind of gave him a little warning, like, you know, like stop talking about the strikes, or apparently CeCe wasn't even talking to the guy from what he said afterwards. But you know, that's a place where the umpire really just needs to not insert himself into the ballgame. I can't stand when umpires, you know, they get big-headed and they feel the need to say, hey, I'm here, and then they make a visit like that. There's just no reason for it.
Ellsbury had the go-ahead home run in the 7th inning. This was the difference in the game. This is, I mean, we're going to talk about Ellsbury and Gardner later in the show, but this Ellsbury's been absolutely terrible. It was good to see him get the home run, though. This was sort of his only big hit that I can remember recently.
Yeah, it was a big one. Obviously, came was the go-ahead run against his former team to take the series. So, yes, it was a big one. I thought it was going to jar him out of a slump. You know, those are the types of hits that can really, you know, start a momentum, I think, at the plate. But it just wasn't the case. So, but in that moment, great job by Ellsbury. It was a big hit.
All right, so let me ask you this. I know we've talked so much about CeCe, and we've beat everything to, you know, pretty much dead at this point. But what are we going to see from CC the last 2 months of the season, do you think?
I just don't know. I mean, we always talk about, and the one thing I'll go back to is that he's an all-time competitor. And the guy cannot stand to struggle. I mean, it's not like he's going out there and trying to be bad. He's trying to pitch as well as he possibly can. And so I think we're going to see that. We're going to see CC competing as hard as he can. And, you know, whatever he kind of mustered up for this last game, hopefully he can bottle that up and use it every fifth day, because, you know, he was good. He did look like old CC. He was fired up. I liked seeing the raw emotion from him. And then I like seeing 94 miles an hour out of his hand too. So I don't have an answer for you, because I just don't know. I don't think anybody does. You know, but hopefully he can kind of bottle that up and he found something. That's all I can hope for, I guess.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I have no clue. He could go out next outing and not even make it through two innings, and I wouldn't be surprised. But hopefully that doesn't happen. all right, Friday was the start of the terrible weekend against Toronto. Yankees lost this game in 10 innings. But this was, you mentioned, they faced another knuckleballer, R.A. Dickey, and pretty much only one run, you know, only one run, the Teixeira home run. And, you know, I don't know what to say about knuckleballers. Like, can you really get mad that the offense couldn't do anything against a knuckleballer? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I just can't stand seeing that ball come in and do all these swings and misses when it's coming, you know, like 70 miles an hour. It's just so frustrating. And I can only imagine how frustrating. I've never faced a knuckleballer in my life. So, you know, or at least anybody who has a decent knuckleball. So I can only imagine how frustrating it is for a batter who's taking, you know, batting practice and practicing his timing and getting it down, you know, and he's looking for, you know, 90 to 90, you know, mid 90s fastballs, and he's getting, you know, an 80 mile an hour fastball and then something that's dancing all over the damn place. So it's like playing wiffle ball. But yeah, I don't know. You can't, how do you get down on them for that? But you have to, because they're professional hitters, right? They have to adjust. So, and they just didn't make the adjustments.
And here start some of the questionable moves that Girardi made over the weekend. It was 1-1 going into extra innings, and in comes Brandon Pinder for the 10th inning. He immediately gives up a bomb to Bautista. They lose the game. I understand bringing in Pinder in extra innings, maybe if you're in like the 13th inning, but it's the 10th inning. Miller just threw 6 pitches to get through the 9th inning. You can go back to him, or you can go to Warren, who didn't pitch since Wednesday. So he had a day off. Why couldn't you bring in Warren in that situation, who's probably your third best guy out of the bullpen?
Yeah, this is not a time to experiment. I mean, I think Girardi and everybody else has seen what Pinder's got good stuff. I mean, he does. He's got electric stuff. He's got another guy with a high 90s fastball that the Yankees seem to be enamored by. And, you know, but bringing him in the 10th inning, and like you said, you know, Miller only threw 6 innings or 6 pitches. He could easily go back in and throw another inning, or at least get through a couple batters. And then Warren, you know, I totally we're in a complete agreement with this, because while I like and I see the potential in Pinder, that is not the time to bring him in and experiment with a guy we have no idea how he's going to show up in a big situation.
Yeah, and this is just more, you know, I'm looking up the stats now on what the Yankees are in extra innings. They're now 2-6. That's terrible. That, to me, that comes down to management more than anything. You make mistakes, you know, with the bullpen, or you don't, you know, make a call to hit and run or something like that. You know, Girardi, I think, is not doing or doing something to you know, to have that kind of record in extra innings.
No, I have to agree. I think that Girardi definitely makes some. He makes a lot of questionable calls. I mean, people are scratching their head a lot of times when this dude is making decisions, and it seems like he's making a lot of the wrong decisions lately. It seems like every decision he's made has been bad. You know, he's not only is our offense slumping, but Girardi's in a massive slump himself.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else to say about that other than you can't use Pinder in that situation. You got to use somebody better, and there's really nothing else to say. I'm not even mad at Pinder. I'm mad at Girardi for that.
Well, and not even to say someone better. I mean, you want to use someone who is more established at that point, right? Someone that you know has been in a situation like that. I mean, literally, this is the biggest game of the year right now. We're playing the first game against Toronto, who is closing in on us fast. It's a 1-1 game in and we're in extra innings at home. Like, that is not a time to bring in a guy who is one of, I don't know, how many guys have we brought up for a day or 2 days or a week? I mean, it's been a rotation of these guys from AAA have been coming up. Not the time to do it. Not the time.
And then
if Warren comes in and gives up that home run, I feel a lot better about it because, you know, at least he's a guy that we trust.
Oh, I'm totally with you. Yeah. I almost feel like I'm mad, but I don't know. I'm just mad at Girardi. I don't know what else to get mad at for that kind of move. It's just the 100% wrong move, in my opinion.
Right.
All right. Saturday, we mentioned earlier that we were at the game, and I think it's a good thing we were drinking heavily the entire day and that it was nice and sunny out and we sort of had a nice day otherwise, because they lost 6-0, one of the most boring games of the year. And the one play that this game boils down to is in the sixth inning, there's no score. Nova had already thrown 100 pitches and his bases loaded, smokes up. There's one out. He just walked Encarnacion on 4 pitches. He's clearly out of gas. Anyone in the stadium could see that. Anyone watching on TV could see that. Anyone listening could hear that. Girardi leaves him in and he hangs a curve and it's a grand slam for smoke and that's ball game.
So I just don't understand the mentality, because it seems like that you have a similar situation and with a different result as far as Girardi's decision. Like each time, like you have he's always talking about how we want to make sure that we're giving our guys rest. We're not going to push them too much. We're you know, making sure that they're coming back and rested for the end of the season. Yet you have a guy coming off of Tommy John surgery who is over 100 pitches, like you said, looked clearly out of gas, just walked a guy on 4 pitches to load the bases, and you're going to leave him in? It just doesn't make any sense. We're in the same situation, or you have a similar pitching rotation. You have a guy at 80 pitches in the sixth inning, and you're pulling him. Like I just don't understand where the line is. Like, are we protecting them? Are we not protecting them? Do we trust them? Do we not trust them? There's no clear line in the sand right now, and I just don't understand it.
We're talking about a guy in Girardi who took out Justin Wilson on Tuesday night in the middle of an at bat
with 2 strikes.
Yes, to bring
it was
to
a
Kansas.
1-2 count.
He'll make a pitching change any time of day, no matter what the count is, and he leaves Nova in right here, and he gives up the grand slam. You bring in anybody. Bring in Shree. Bring in Wilson. Bring in Ward. Anybody else you have to bring in at that point. Nova was done at that point. He kept doing the game. You know, he was laboring through the first couple innings. That's why he threw a lot of pitches. It was a warm day. He clearly was out of gas, and I understand you trust Nova. I think Nova is one of the bigger game pitchers on this team. Ever since day one in the major leagues, he's always been able to get out of jams. But that's not a jam that you let him get out of, because it's clearly, you know, he's clearly done at that point. And to leave him in is just another colossal mistake.
I agree, and we paid for it. It was a terrible moment, because I the entire stadium was deflated at that time. I mean, that's a grand slam in a 0-0 game in the sixth inning with our bats just completely on our shoulders. There was no hope left at that point, and you knew it was game over.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it wasn't going to make a difference because Price was nasty that day and the Yankees didn't score, but you still never know what happens if it's a close game, if it's a 0-0 or a 1-0 game.
Exactly. You get into the bullpen, you never know what could happen, and you know, there's different mentalities when it's a 0-0 game, a 1-0 game, than a 4-0 game.
Yep. all right. Anything else you want to say about that nice move by Girardi?
No. I just it's just there's a laundry list now that's starting to pile up.
Sunday, the Blue Jays finished the sweep. It was Tanaka versus Marco Estrada. I mean, Tanaka, I'm not going to say he pitched bad, but if he's our you know, ace, he's got to go in there and shut the bats down for Toronto, and he didn't do that. He gave up 2 more home runs. That makes a total of 18 on the season for him and only 16 starts. again, he only gave up 2 runs, but 2 home runs and one to Donaldson in the first inning and sort of got the Yankees down right away again.
I'm not gonna say that he pitched badly, or I'm not even too upset about those home runs, to tell you the truth, because it seems like look, this has been a trend. We know this. You gave me a, what'd you say, 18 and 16 starts. So yep. A lot of these, I'm curious to know what the numbers are on how many of those are solo shots, because I think he is taking more risks when there's nobody on base, which is something I think you can kind of live with. So the fact that he pitched 6 innings, 2 runs. But he was cruising. When through the sixth inning, he got through the heart of the lineup at 80 pitches. Here I go back to these questionable decisions. Like we're coddling him now. We're coddling our ace in the biggest game of the year to this point now, right? We need to salvage. We need to come back and salvage a win. And he's taking our ace out in the sixth inning with 80 pitches after he just did very well against part of the meat of their order. So I don't get it, because a couple nights before that, Girardi's talking about how we need Tanaka to go deeper in games. We need him to start pitching deeper into games. We need somebody to pitch deeper in games. Yeah. This was a soundbite from Joe, and now he is. You know, he has a position where he's able to keep a guy in who has a very manageable pitch count, 80 pitches through 6 innings. Let him go back out there. Instead, you know, he brings he brought in Warren. Warren struggled, and luckily Justin Wilson came in, I think, with the bases loaded with no outs and pitched a miraculous inning and got out of the inning. So. Justin Wilson definitely bailed him out, but I don't understand the move. If you're trying to save your bullpen and trying to get more length from your starters, and you have a perfect opportunity to do it with your number one guy, and you don't do it, you just pull him out. I don't understand.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree on that. I mean, it's essentially, I can't remember the last time a Yankee starter got past the sixth inning. You know what I mean? It's always 5 1/3, 6
innings.
It was
Nathan Eovaldi, actually. It was Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah, when?
Six and a third in his last outing.
6 1/3. I mean, that's not a deep start.
Right.
I mean, it's deeper than these other guys, but that's not like – that doesn't save your bullpen necessarily.
No, I know. But the thing is like if we're trying to save our bullpen and we have a perfect opportunity to do it, like there was no reason to pull him out of that game. It wasn't like he labored over the last inning. He pitched well the last inning. He pitched very well against the top of the Toronto lineup, and then you're just pulling him at 80 pitches. I mean, he had Warren up pitching in the bullpen in the beginning of the sixth inning. He was ready to go at that point. So it wasn't even like he pulled him in the middle of the inning. Like he was ready to pull him out at 70 some pitches. I didn't understand the move.
And you know what? It probably wasn't going to matter because the Yankees got shut out again, and that's the first time since 1999 that the Yankees were shut out in back-to-back games.
Yeah, that's a crazy number. When I heard that, that was extremely surprising. I guess that's a good thing for us because we haven't been shut out in back-to-back. But man, that's a bad streak to break.
So, you know, we can say, you know, they faced two knuckleballers this week. That's weird. Maybe that's why the bats went cold. But I think a bigger reason than any why the Yankees' offense is not producing right now is that Ellsbury and Gardner are not getting on base and they're not hitting. Ellsbury's last 100 plate appearances, he's batting 170 with a .216 on base percentage. And Gardner, since the All-Star break, is only hitting .206. That's pretty much 100 points lower than he was in the first half. So there's two guys right there, your table setters, who have been dynamic, all first half. I know Ellsbury was on the DL, but when those guys were clicking, the lineup was really unstoppable, and you had all the power hitters after them. But right now, they're just not getting on base, and the offense is totally flat.
No, I totally agree. I mean, we saw how good this lineup can be when those two guys are hitting their stride. And the fact that they've been struggling has really affected this lineup. It's not putting anybody on base for our power hitters. And the fact that their averages are down, I mean, it's a bad thing for the top of your lineup to be down, especially when you have those two guys and you have so much power behind it. You know, there was another thing that I didn't even realize, honestly, because of all these home runs that have been being hit. And I guess this kind of supports why that's been. But to me, this number that I'm about to say is just mind-blowing. Ellsbury doesn't have a stolen base since, I think, May.
Yep.
And Gardner doesn't have a stolen base. I think the number I heard was like 45 games. Something crazy. Something absolutely ridiculous. When you have that much speed at the top of the lineup and you have guys who have been, you know, Ellsbury, I would call him, he was a prolific base dealer, in his career. Gardner, I think, has improved. And and early in the season, you saw that he was running and, a higher percentage of stolen bases. But when you have guys like that at the top of your lineup and they're not running, they're not being, you know, they're not using their instincts and able to steal bases, they're just kind of standing pat, you lose a lot of dynamic at the top of the lineup. And I understand that you have all that power and you don't want to risk getting thrown out because of the power behind you. But, you know, again, this I think goes back to Girardi just not managing or even holding his guys back. Like, where's the, you know, we got to, at this point, we've been struggling. If we get on, let's steal some bases. Let's hit and run. Let's manufacture some runs. But when you're not stealing bases at the top of the lineup with these two guys, you're really going to struggle to do that.
Yeah, and you probably hit it right there when Girardi doesn't want to take the bat out of A-Rod and Teixeira's hands. But when you score four runs in five games, you got to change it up. You have no choice.
Yeah, and well, and the other thing is the amount of games that they have zero stolen bases is just entirely too many, because at that point, now I mean, it's, they're not a threat, right? They're not a threat anymore. They haven't stolen a base in 45 games. Why would I? Why am I even going to look at you? Because you're not going. It's just it's not even a thought in the pitcher's mind, which I think affects the guys who are coming after you, because, you know, if you're on base and you're a threat to steal, I think you're getting that much of a, you know, a little bit more of an advantage for the batter, for the pitcher to slip up a little bit, you know, to take his concentration off the batter. So I think it's a big mistake.
Yeah, and I think maybe some people were looking at that last road trip and saying, oh, the bats are doing well. But they had some weird games in there. You remember the 21-run game in Texas, and then they had a couple double-digit games in Chicago, I think. But other than that, I feel like they were pretty quiet. So it seems like it's either they score 10-plus runs or two runs.
Yeah, well, and that's been our bugaboo all season, are these streaks. And I think with the games, the winning and losing, we've kind of, as of late, well, not right now, but before the trade deadline, we kind of nipped that in the butt, you know, because we've been winning a lot of series. We haven't really had a long losing streak. Nobody collectively has been hitting a slump. So, you know, we're starting to see that now where you know, the batting averages, not getting on base is absolutely affecting this team.
All I know is that when the Yankees start hitting again, it's going to be because Ellsbury and Gardner start to hit again.
I agree with you. I totally agree with you.
So they need to get it going this week on the road. You know, maybe going on the road is a good thing. Get away from the home fans. You know, you just laid an egg. Get out on the road and get your mojo back.
Look, man, we got to come back right now. I mean, now is the time that they have to start making a move and get their butts in gear, because Toronto is right around the corner, and that is going to be enemy territory. I mean, those are going to be some hostile playing grounds up in Toronto. So I know they're going to be fired up. I know those crowds are going to be fired up, and the Yankees got to answer. They got to put up some numbers right now, and they got to answer the bell.
Before we talk about the upcoming week, I want to mention two plays from Sunday's game that sort of summed up the entire weekend. And they're kind of funny plays, but at the same time, it does, like I said, just sum up the crappy play that they're playing right now. So Bautista hit the home run off Tanaka. I think it was the fourth inning, and a fan threw the ball back and hit Brett Gardner right in the back of the head.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. You know, the kid, whoever threw that back was just like closing his eyes and launching the ball.
Of course. Yeah.
And you know, unfortunately, it hit that noggin. That's a big noggin to hit. I mean, that's a big. but yeah, that's crazy. I actually didn't even see the clip. I need to go back and look at that.
Yeah, there's a couple vines online of it. Yeah, Gardner sort of it's one of those things that Gardner's just standing there with his hands on his hips because, you know, he's probably pissed off. You know, he's not.
Yeah.
He's not hitting right now. He actually slammed his helmet down when he grounded out earlier in that game. So he was pissed all around. But to just be standing out there and get drilled in the back of the dome, it's just everything's
it's really,
going,
like, really?
Yeah, everything's going wrong right now. Yeah. And then Teixeira in the ninth inning reached into the stands to try and catch a foul ball. And all right, I'll describe the situation. So he reaches over, the fans get out of the way, but it was like a row and a half in, so he was really reaching for it, and he couldn't make the play. The ball is then on the ground, and one of the fans in the front row sort of, like, you know, lunges for the ball and definitely checks, you know, into Teixeira, and Teixeira loses it. He kind of gets, you know, right in the guy's, in the fan's face, starts yelling at him, giving him, like, a nasty look. And the fan was like, you know, oh shit, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. Sort of backed off. And then after the game, Teixeira was quoted, "You can insult, you can't assault. We know you're upset we lost three in a row, but keep it to insults. Obviously saying you can't assault a player. And if he honestly thinks that that fan assaulted him, then he needs to get his eyes checked. He's just pissed off because the team is playing like crap right now.
Yeah, and Teixeira is an emotional guy, and that's exactly what it is. It's just feeding a fire of these guys struggling. And, you know, I bet you if you ask him the next day, he probably would admit that he overreacted to that. But, you know, when there's a fan – first of all, they got out of the way for the ball, right?
Like, yeah.
Good move. All right, good job. Good job, fellas. And then the ball's on the ground. At that point, when the ball's on the ground, the play's over. As a fan, you have blinders on. You're just, like, going after that ball. And it was obviously a, you know, it was an accident. It wasn't like the dude was trying to hit Teixeira. So it was just raw. I think heat of the moment, frustration.
That's
all kind of bottled together.
Frustration. I mean, this team is frustrated. They're pressing right now. Yeah. It's showing on the field. And I mean, to me, those two plays sort of summed up the entire weekend in a nutshell there. So as we mentioned, they have three in Cleveland, and the big game, I think, for this series will be Severino's pitching on Tuesday. I'm looking forward to seeing him again.
Well, you know, we have an off day for them to kind of regroup, going to Cleveland on the road, you know, letting it all hang out there. Severino's a stopper right now, right? Our kid is now the stopper. He needs to put the end to this madness, and the bats need to support him. They need to come out and they need to support him and they need to hit the ball. And I don't care how we get runs. Let's steal bases. Let's manufacture runs. Let's do whatever we got to do to get on base and get runs across, because we need something to spur this on, and you know, we can't just sit and wait for the home runs to come, because if they don't come, then we will see a losing streak, an extended losing streak.
I mean, the Indians have a great pitching staff, so they're just going to be, you know, they're going to see more tough guys on the mound in this series, as they just saw against Toronto. So yeah, you're right. I mean, it's all up to the offense there, and then they go to Toronto. If they're, God forbid, if they're down in the division by the time they go to Toronto, things could get really ugly.
Yeah, that's why I think this series in Cleveland is massively important for us to get our, you know, to get our mojo back, because I mean, let's be honest. This is the first time in a long time that we're complaining about this team, right? This is the first time that we've had frustrations overall with this team. And part of the week was that we won a series. It's just, you know, it was a bad time to show up or to not show up at home against your most competitive rival at this point in the division. So yeah, they need to regroup right now, and they need to just show that, hey, we have some veterans on this team. We know how to handle this, and let's handle it well. Let's handle it like pros and get out there and hit the ball and take care of Cleveland, and then you know, play well in Toronto.
Were you shocked at how many Blue Jays fans were at the stadium on Saturday?
I was in the bleachers, no less. I mean, there were Blue Jays fans out there. There was a Phillies fan out there just like being loud for no reason. Like, why are you here? Why are you even here in your Phillies gear, dude? I don't get it.
He got
booted from the stadium.
He got booted. Thank God.
Yeah, he got led away in cuffs.
He was chirping me. I was going to the bathroom and he was right behind me and he was like giving me shit. And I was like, what are you doing here with a Phillies jersey on? It's 90 degrees out. You're kind of a fat guy wearing a nylon jersey, sweating to death. Like, what are you doing here? And he's just chirping me the entire time in the bathroom. So I'm glad he got booted.
Yeah. And there were a lot of Toronto fans out there, and a lot of them had very new hats. Looked like they were all shiny and
freshly
really blue.
Pressed.
Yeah, freshly pressed, stickers still on. You know, these guys were rocking their gear. But you know, this is what happens when teams hit streaks like this. People come out of the woodwork. So whatever, you know, those hats will be collecting dust soon enough, hopefully.
Yeah, this is the first time in our lifetime that we've been that the Blue Jays have been a threat.
Yeah, in a long time. I mean, I was a kid when they were doing well. So it's been a very long time since the Toronto Blue Jays have been good. But you know, hopefully we can muster the storm, man, and kind of weather it and come back and show them that you know, that we have some professionals and we can overcome. So I got confidence still. I do. I have confidence in this team.
All right. Well, we're going to be recording, you know, this time next week. If the Yankees, you know, win a couple series on the road this weekend, I think, you know, we'll totally forget about this week. But if this continues, it's going to be pretty ugly next week, I think, for us. But until then, have a good week, everybody, and we'll talk to you then.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show,
We'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.